I'd like to draw us into the area now of pupil voice.
I think one of the interesting things is when you start focusing on what pupils, children, young people think themselves, the perception that you get is often very different. In some work we did in the Midlands, we asked for teachers' perceptions, this was in relation to visual impairment, teaching assistants' perceptions, parents' perceptions, and the children, young people's perceptions. And what was striking about the children, young people's perceptions was that, A, they were generally different to everyone else, that what they thought was difficult wasn't actually what the others thought was difficult, and certainly wasn't difficult in the social sense, and it was the social sense that was very significant for them. So although they were working with the practicalities of their visual need, it was the social element of it that was of concern. And they, just contrary to what we were saying earlier about progression, they were very conscious of how this might play out in the future. And we were working with 12 and 13-year-olds, and they were thinking, well, what does this mean when I'm studying in the senior part of the secondary school? What does this mean about going to college? Will there be support? Will people notice? So their emphasis was quite different. I think the mosaic approach that was developed here at the Institute in part, where you look at a different experience from many different perspectives and use very different modalities, pictures, videos, reporting, conversation, is a way of capturing that, particularly with younger children. Because there is an issue, if one's going to say pupil voice is important, then how is that pupil voice accessed? And a formal interview or discussion like this may not be the most appropriate context in which to do
it. It's not just access, it's actually listened to and acted upon. I mean, for a long time in annual reviews, children who have statements of special educational needs have an opportunity to voice their views and their concerns and what they'd like changed. And, you know, I've sat in many of these, and I think rarely are what the child, the young person has said, actually taken on board and worked with, because the adults in the group know better. Or that's
certainly
the, you
has
know,
to be, has to be facilitated, and that's part of the preparation for that particular sort of activity. And if it isn't, then the likelihood of children's voices coming out.
Even if they say, and they're very clear and articulate about what they want, you know, the adults will sit and say, yes, okay, and then, but nothing changes.
Or the systems can't be flexible enough to support them. So, for example, I did some work at One Leffe College, and one of the things that the young people in that college want was independent travel. But for various reasons, some of them were still being bused to college, but the reasons were nothing to do with them. And it was absolutely bizarre to see people being bused into college. And when you ask them what they're doing at college, they're doing an independence course. But the systems really need to be flexible. And I suppose we're trying to address that through things like personal budgets and so on. But I think it's particularly hard for young people when they're being given help to turn around. So I remember one girl in the school saying to me, well, actually, I don't want all this help and I don't want a teaching assistant with me the whole time. But at her review, the teaching assistant was there, her parents were there, the school was there. They felt they were doing the best for her. It's incredibly difficult as one young person to say, I don't want this help.
I think so, but it's also worth looking at data on samples that have shown that young people, when they look back on their school days, have said, actually, the most important thing to me was the learning support assistant who helped me get through that. And there are studies that have actually, you know, 16, 17-year-olds look back. So it's in a sense, it's like most of special needs, it's not one size fits all, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And it's how you do that.
Yep.
But the issue of participation as part of the process to getting something done is probably the very most difficult part of all of this, because with the best will and for the best motives, one can create a situation where a voice can be heard. But very often, when I've been in the past responsible for statement reviews where children and young people have been active in those reviews, you come to a point where either explicitly or implicitly the question is asked, well, what will this do in the future? How will this change what is going on? And often, partly because of the systems, partly because of the capacities of the various services, the likelihood of that being changed is very, very limited indeed, because there is no explicit practical outcome that can follow on from it. that that group of people have control over or can influence. So there's also an issue about the recognising the limits to what is possible and where those limits come from and how they can be accessed.
No, I think that's absolutely true. It's important, you know, you have to take into account the realities within which you're operating. But I think certainly in my work with older learners, that is kids in secondary school and going up the grades in secondary school, young people that are a bit turned off school, possibly will have special educational needs in terms of their behaviour in school. If you don't listen to what they're interested in, if you don't enable them to be an interchange at these annual reviews or whatever meetings they have with their teachers or tutors, which allows them to see why they might want to do it. In other words, if you don't negotiate them to be part of the process, it's not going to happen. And I can see that the trouble is teachers are put in the situation, there's a lot of tension between trying to get the kids through a qualification, for example, or stick to a curriculum path. But on the other hand, you have to take account of where it's going to get to the point where it's counterproductive and the child is actually going to stop attending school or something like that.